This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
In 1886, Robert Louis Stevenson wrote the novella The Strange Case of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, in which a man is seen to have two wildly different personalities, one good-natured and one of pure evil. What isn't so widely known about the book is that it was actually a metaphor for Manchester City's 24-25 season, in which one football team is seen to have two wildly different personalities. The dominators on Saturday became the dominated on Wednesday, as Pep Guardiola's side put in perhaps their best and worst performances of the season in the space of 4 days. Good news, though. Only top of the table Liverpool and cursed opposition Tottenham to come this week. That should make for a fun Blue Moon podcast for everyone. Strap in. All of that to come on today's show. Plus, we'll hear from the former City tough-tackling red card machine Danny Teato. He'll tell us all about his time at Main Road, at the back-to-back promotions in 99 and 2000, and that spectacular dismissal against Norwich. Let's get stuck in. Deep breath, everyone. I'm David Mooney. With me this week is City fan Kieran Murray.
Hello there.
And from BBC Radio Manchester, Mike Miney.
Hello.
So then, yes, we'll get to all of the bad stuff shortly. We'll try and inject some fun into the programme to start with. And Kieran, sorry for the industrial language to start here, but I've really enjoyed all the English journalists in Madrid being asked by the Spanish press for the difference between fuck off and fuck you. You're the English teacher on the panel here. Could you help us out here?
Fuck off sort of means to, like, go away, I would say. And then fuck you is really, like, deeply personal. I want to get underneath your skin with this.
So fuck you is
great.
Worse.
Doesn't it sound great in an Irish accent? Wow. Wow. If Bellingham had said that to the referee, I'm not surprised he sent him off. I felt threatened there.
Any language mishaps for you, Kieran? You've been abroad and kind of tried to speak the native tongue and it's all gone wrong?
Yeah. I was in a stag in Paris during the... it must have been the 2016 Euros. And... we'd been on the beer all day, and I thought I would try some of my KCHD French out. And I went to ask where the toilet was, and obviously needed a piss. So I said to your man, "Où est la piscine?" which actually means "Where's the swimming pool?" I realised. Yeah. So yeah, that fell a bit. I think my problem, speaking of the Irish accent, really, is people not understanding me, even when I'm, you know, speaking English.
Yeah, speaking the same language as they are.
Yeah, I mean, you've struggled with my accent sometimes. And
I just called you Murphy for 5 years, thinking you were obviously Irish, therefore you were called Murphy.
Yeah. Sorry about the stereotyping there to the listeners. I remember one time going in, there was a hairdresser that did £5 haircuts, and it was a Friday, it was packed, and I opened the door and just stood at the door and said, "Do you need to have a booking, man, or can you take walk-ins?" Like, and he went, "What?" And I went, "Do I need to have booked, or can you just sit down? Like, do you do walk-ins?" And he's like, "Sorry, what?" So he made me repeat it like 4 times, and then I slowed it down and was like, "Do I need to have a booking, or do you take walk-ins?" And he said, "Yeah, we take walk-ins." So then I had to go through the embarrassment of, because he said, "They do take walk-ins," everybody in the place was looking at me. So then I had to go and sit down. I couldn't just clear off then. Like,
no, but so imagine if you'd asked, "Do you do walk-ins?" and then just left.
Yeah, well, I should have. It would have been less embarrassing than sitting there with everybody, like, having had to repeat myself 4 times when I was speaking pure English, as I thought.
Yeah, amazing. Mike, any language mishaps abroad for you?
Not overly so. I think I'm very much a typical Englishman that I will force English on you even if you don't want English.
Chips, mate. I said chips. Yeah.
But I was in the San Siro a few years ago when City played Atalanta in the Champions League, and our the kit we used back then in commentary for the geeks is used an ISDN kit. Well, the San Siro didn't have many ISDN lines, but we were promised one. Got there, set up. Wouldn't connect. Couldn't work it at all. The kind receptionist gave me the IT guy's number. I thought, right, okay, he picked up. "Para buongiorno." I was like, "Do you speak English?" "Buongiorno." I was like, okay. Anyway, I was bailed out by the brilliant Ali Bruce Ball from Five Live, who did a year out at university in Italy.
Oh, he does Italian, does he?
So yeah. He was fluent anyway. I've never heard ISDN spoken so beautifully in Italian as Ali Bruce Ball managed. Anyway, we got it worked, but yeah, if anything goes wrong abroad, I struggle.
Yeah, excellent. Me too. I'm glad I'm not the only one. And I mean, the kind of fun opening question as well, I guess, because of the nature of City's consolation goal in Madrid this week. I just want your best consolation goals, Mike. Any particular favourites? Were like I think for a consolation goal, it kind of has to come at the point where all hope is lost. It can't give any hope whatsoever to the game. All hope has to be lost, and they have to celebrate as if they'd rather have missed.
Yeah, see, we were talking about this just before we recorded, and we did. We saw a survey that mentioned Darren Fletcher against Manchester City in 2011, the 6-1.
No chance.
But I know for a fact that at 3-1, everyone in Old Trafford, if you were of blue persuasion, absolutely papped yourself thinking it's 3-all, this game is finishing. Or if you're a United fan, you're thinking, right, the comeback's on, let's go. So it doesn't count.
Yeah, can't.
However, I spent a little bit of time living in the South West, living in Taunton, and Bristol City were the next best thing to, you know, to Premier League football. And I remember once, I think there were 2-0 down to 3-0 down maybe to QPR. And it was late on, stupidly late. There was no chance. And Nicky Maynard in the penalty area scored a bicycle kick, top corner. Beautiful. But it's that situation. He ran to go and pick the ball up, to go and try and start again.
What's the point, lads? Yeah.
It's Puskas worthy, but nobody ever knows it. Nobody remembers it.
Yeah. Kieran, any of a City persuasion? There's one that immediately jumps to mind for me. I wondered if you were going to think of this one.
Well, it's funny actually, because as Mike was speaking there, I was like, I would have said Darren Fletcher is one of my favourite consolation goals, because when they scored that, the floodgates opened even further. So, like, from City's point of view, it was actually a lovely consolation goal, because they had belief all of a sudden, and they were wide open at the back, and then, you know, we got six of the best. There was a strange consolation goal in another derby, where it was an awful derby under Pellegrini. And I think Aguero scored his 100th goal.
It was his 100th goal, yeah.
Yeah, there was a huge big milestone goal, and I've never known a consolation that, like, fell as flat and as empty as that one. Like, off the top of my head, I can't really think of...
Can I raise you Alano at Middlesbrough, making it 7-1?
Yes. Yeah,
there was still time for Middlesbrough to score an eighth. I know that, but like, honestly, Alano like just popped it in from the edge of the box on his left foot. Mark Schwartz are left standing, and then just kind of like just jogs away from it, because it's like all hope is lost.
I can't believe how difficult I'm finding it to remember these. But then again, I can hardly remember who scored against Newcastle at the weekend when I'm on a show to talk about it. So
I think part of it, that's our fault. Because if it's 5-0 and you make it 5-1 as a commentator, you know it's a world-class goal, but you know it means nothing in the game. And so your voice goes, you know, like, Elano, oh, it's 7-1. And this is changing nothing in the game, and it'll be remembered for Middlesbrough's win, not City's cracker from Elano, you know?
Yeah, and the crowd as well, the crowd noise just doesn't really do anything, is it? It's so flat. Although fair play to the City fans at the Bernabeu last night, I think they ironically made a bit of noise for when Gonzalez's goal was finally given.
Got to make your own fun sometimes, haven't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Speaking of which, that's the next hour on the podcast, so here we go. Kieran, I've called City the Harvey Dent of football teams for this season, because they are basically two-face. Great one game, horrible the next. Can you explain why they were so good against Newcastle but then so bad in Madrid?
Did you forget your own intro there, because it was the Jekyll and Hyde?
Yeah, I'm busting out all sorts of literary references for this one.
Because I teach Jekyll and Hyde, as you may know, and one of my mates, Lucy, who lives in Madrid, texted me last night asking how I was feeling, because her housemate was buzzing about it, and I actually use the Jekyll and Hyde code as well. I am very low, Lucy, very low. It will not last long, thank God. when Dr. Jekyll's about to die.
This is a highbrow episode. Oh, that is so painfully horrible, isn't it? Yeah.
Lost French, on me, lads. Carry on.
French lessons with Uwe Le Pessine, and now here we are with some Jekyll and Hyde. They are. Absolutely. I mean, what better week to kind of continue on the analogy of that two sides that they have, and it is. It's one of those you just want to kind of pull the plug and hibernate away now after, you know, this season. It's been a funny one. It feels like for the rest of it, it's just if we have had these two sides and this Jekyll and Hyde or Harvey Dent or whatever, I think we need to kind of almost discover our third side now and just go for, think about next season now. Youth, bed in new players, fresh ideas, try to get over the line for fourth, but really just concentrate on like maybe the shackles being off a little bit, all the weight of the world gone, and nothing much to play for. It'd be nice to go far and win the FA Cup, obviously, but it seems like everything else is gone. And yeah, as I say, like a perfect week summed up. A thrashing over Newcastle, where City looked the part. It was free flowing. There were fresh ideas. There looked to be a fresh impetus as well. And then I can't remember a more toothless performance than last night in Madrid, apart from maybe in Madrid. When was that, 2016, under Pellegrini in the semi-final? Just spineless, toothless, nothing going on. And just puffered out in a whimper, really, which is probably fitting for the Champions League campaign this season. There was nothing doing, really, from the get-go, I don't think.
Yeah. Mike, from the story point of view, when you think of it as, like, with our journalistic hats on, like, is it possible for the season to just kind of, as Kieran says, just get the best out of the season now? Because, ultimately, City have been so dominant over the last 4 or 5 years or so that it is a story that you know, people like us will keep coming back to. Oh, City have lost again. What is going on?
Yeah, and weirdly, look, this is odd. And going to sound odd. But has it... has it not been an exciting season to watch City because of that Jekyll and Hyde nature? You don't know what you're going to get. You could have Southampton next week, and actually there'd be a suspicion of City could mess this up and not win. I mean, the only hope maybe for Manchester City fans is if it's Jekyll Hyde or whatever. Real Madrid bad, Newcastle good, Real Madrid bad, Liverpool good, maybe. I'm trying to help here.
Is that how the story goes, Kieran, in Jekyll and Hyde? Is it a 50-50 split between the personalities?
Hyde, the evil. I mean, the whole metaphor is it's an idea, it's an analogy for if you let evil reign unchecked. So Hyde ends up taking over Jekyll's body, and Jekyll sort of fizzles out and disappears, and then Hyde is about to get caught, and because of Victorian society... I hope some of my year 11s are listening to this, by the way. because Victorian society expectations were so high, Hyde knew he was about to get caught, so he commits suicide, and they find the body of a self-destroyer, which again is a nice metaphor because he's destroyed his sense of self, his own actual identity and well-being, which is a bit like what Manchester City have done.
Doesn't bode well for the end of the season, though, really, Mike, does it?
No, but do you know what? I actually think that... I don't think City were ever going to win the Champions League. The way the league phase had gone, and this season, nothing convinced me. I know it's a knockout tournament. You get the luck of the draw, maybe you get through. But I just didn't see anything there that convinced me. And I actually think with the way the season has gone, and clearly there's going to be a top four battle, certainly featuring, you know, Chelsea, Forest, City, Newcastle, probably maybe put Villa in there as well. I think that somehow depends on how far they go in Europe. Who knows, Bournemouth maybe. But I actually, City now only have two things to focus on, and they'll get all their midweeks back. But is an FA Cup round going back to a midweek, I think? But you know, predominantly now, they've saved themselves 5, 6 midweeks where they can get, you know, with those January signings that are notoriously difficult because they don't have the time on the training ground. Well, they will have the time on the training ground now. So I actually think they'll do that. I think they have to target the FA Cup simply for silverware. They've not had a trophyless season since Pep's first season in charge. So I think they need to, you know, keep, again, it's all about momentum, isn't it? And keep that up. But it's, you know, there's always a stick to poke City with. And every time they've had one, they have overcome it. So the treble being won, winning the Champions League one, 3 in a row, now 4 in a row. And I was trying to think, what's the next one? And it's you know, United, if you go back to the Ferguson era, which everything is compared to, they were in the Champions League every year. They never failed. And City have done, you know, 12, 13 years consecutively in the Champions League. But just keep another one going. Keep it on the tabs. Have that Real Madrid existence in the Champions League. So top four's a must, and I think that you know, it didn't seem like it. It's always hard in defeat, but actually later down the line, I think you'll look back and think, you know, City going out in the Champions League wasn't a disaster.
Yeah, you can take the positives. And also, the way the results went elsewhere over that round mean that England are currently top of the table for that fifth place, for that extra place as well. So it's probable that top five will get the Champions League this season as well.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Get your ears around our bonus episodes every Monday. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Let's look at the games specifically, and we'll start with Madrid, because Nico Gonzalez, I mean, over the Newcastle game, pretty much showed what was missing in that team. And then you look at how he performed in Madrid, he looked very new to this team. And that, I guess that just kind of shows, when you've got a team as powerful and as experienced as Real Madrid, like, you need all the component parts to work so well. And then when one of them is exposed, and when there's gaps elsewhere, no matter the quality of anybody you put in that middle, it's going to get exposed, isn't it?
Yeah. I suppose he's following the sequence that Mike was just talking about, isn't he? Like, Leighton Orient, bad. Newcastle, good. Real Madrid, bad. So hopefully Liverpool,
roll
good.
On Liverpool. Yeah.
It was funny because on Saturday he... Finally, it was like he'd glued City back together. That like, all those words that we used to use about Rodri, that kind of sounded cliche because we were saying them on the podcast so much, and we thought we were dead cool using words like fulcrum, and all of a sudden nobody's using those words anymore because there is no fulcrum. And then we thought we'd find one again, and you know, he was just. He was a spare part of anything. He wasn't hands on. He wasn't in any way kind of bringing the cohesion, knitting things together. All those things that Rodri basically after his first season, which was a bit hit and miss, after he was embedded in, was basically every single game, everything good seemed to be coming from him in some way or another. And
well, the thing is, I spent the day on Wednesday working at Five Live, and one of the stories I was covering was this sinkhole that's opened up in Surrey. Mm. And all I could do was spend the day thinking, this is just a metaphor for City's midfield right now as well. It's like there's just a hole right in the middle of the road that, you know, one little, like, whatever you put in that, you cannot fill it with one kind of, like, there's no one solution to this.
That's
and
it,
Nico
yeah.
Gonzalez against Real Madrid, he's, you know, he showed what he could do against Newcastle.
Yeah.
But you can't, there's only so much you can do to stem the tide.
It's that old idea, do you know, whenever, is it the Simpsons or somewhere, you know, with like somebody, a big bump appears in their head and they push the bump in and then another bump kind of comes out the other side.
The one where that's where Lisa's babysitting Bart?
Yes.
And it's a case of bad babysitting.
Yeah that's right, yeah. But it is that, once you've it's just all those old metaphors as well, you know, you just they're such cliches, but it's a bucket with many holes in it, and you try to put your fingers over them to stop the flow. And once you think you've got one covered, and you know another one opens up, and it's just, this season has just been, and I mean, you don't need me to go through it. Everybody knows. But this season has just been a write off in so many ways. But so much of it has stemmed from Rodri's absence, which was a huge injury, but then so many other injuries that have come, and Pep, like. Pep is a knackering person. I mean, he's knackered himself out at Barcelona and Bayern Munich. And I wonder, are the players just a bit knackered out by him as well? And then I don't know whether maybe they had in their head that he was taken off and this was going to be their kind of swan song with him. And then he's decided to stay. And it's just sort of hard to find the motivation when you thought there was going to be a fresh start and now there isn't a fresh start. And then...
I think it's also become clear with the squad as well, with them there, they haven't made enough changes to the squad.
No,
and
they haven't.
Sometimes you need to get rid of players that you don't want to get rid of, but to keep everybody on their toes, keep everything fresh.
Yeah, it's it's an amalgamation of factors, isn't it? It is, and Pep's admitted himself that they got, lazy is the wrong word in the summer, but they got cocky and thought the squad that's done four in a row could go and do five in a row. But what they didn't factor in was, yeah, Rodri gets injured, massive blow to the midfield. Suddenly everyone's a year older. And again, Pep alluded to it in a press conference the other week. He asked Gundogan, you've had a year out, has the Premier League really changed that much? And Gundogan replied, saying, yeah, it really has. And he looks leggy now, a year out of the Premier League, where he's just not had that pace and intensity, you know, Premier League compared to La Liga. You know, De Bruyne can't do games every 3 days. At the minute, you know, again, you actually compare it to what's happened to Spurs, for example, is Manchester City managed the injuries really well because they're not 14th, 13th in the Premier League. They're 5th, 4th, and they're hovering in and around that area. But at one point, I think they had, was it 7, 8 first-team players out in one go? And a lot of that was, you know, defence. You had Walker, Stones, Ake, Diaz all out at one point. Rodri obviously missing. And Grealish and Foden were struggling. So
Akanji's been playing injured as well. Yeah.
And it's just one of those where everything that could have gone wrong this season has. And City have just had to ride it out. And it's really, you really want these new signings. You want to be positive and say, there's something there. There is, you know, I'm not judging. They can have the summer. I think you are going to get, again, Jekyll and Hyde performances. So Kuzinov against Newcastle made a mistake, ran the ground against Anthony Gordon and beat him to the ball again. It was Walker-esque. But then last night, I texted Puck because I wasn't watching last night. I was doing a different game, but I messaged a pundit who was in the burnabout. I won't say who to get them in trouble. But he said, Kuzinov looked like a competition winner. Again, so you're going to get those two different performances. You've talked about Nico Gonzalez. The only one I will slightly say I'm impressed by so far is Omar Marmoush, who does look a real deal. But I just think, yeah, this season is, yeah, I think they've learned. And obviously they've got a new director of football coming in the summer, in the guy from Hugo Viana from Sporting Lisbon. Who knows what he's working on at the minute and how they have to plan for the summer. But I also remember that when the financial statement came out, City's annual accounts, there was very much a strong undercurrent of, we have made a lot of money, so we are going to spend a lot of money. And they spent 180. And I think that's partly due to they realised that this season they've got it wrong. And they have, you know, again, going back to the dominant Manchester United era, they didn't get it right every year. And, you know, there was 1 year after winning the treble, they sat out the FA Cup, didn't they? You know, because they knew they couldn't manage everything. And I think it's just one of those that, you know, you just got to, ride it out and suck up these performances in the burnout.
You can't win everything every year. That's the moral of the story. And it's like, good as it's been for the last 5-6 years or so, you have to take these years every now and then.
Cool. But going back to Mike's question earlier on, which I don't think we answered, like, is it not quite exciting in a weird way? It is, because it's unusual. It you know, it's reminiscent of supporting City when you're growing up, or like early takeover seasons where it was all a bit new and a bit embedding and a bit trying to find our feet and work out what was around the corner. For a while there, it was like you almost could guarantee that City were going to win games, and if not games, at the end of it all, win trophies. And then it almost became you're at the ground and, I don't know, a Brentford or a Fulham or somebody would score first. And you would just sort of, your mood wouldn't necessarily really change. It'd be like, you know, when you're resting your little nephew or something and you go, right, I'll give you a 10-second head start, and you know you're going to pound after them anyway and beat them. It was kind of just like, yeah, this will turn out okay anyway. And like that kind of entitlement and spoilt arrogance that kind of started to bleed in.
And do you know when that was lost for me? This season, the moment when City fans stopped thinking that this season was Spurs at home.
Yeah.
Because they were 2-0 down at half time, and I reckon 95% of that stadium went 3-2. At least 2-2. Obviously, I think everyone in the stadium knew the third goal was so important, whichever way it went. But everybody at half time would have gone, do you know what? I'd still back City to draw or win this game. A, because they'd done it a couple of years ago against Spurs, but just the nature of City and how they are. And then actually, obviously Spurs won 4-0. I think at that moment in the season, everybody went, this isn't Manchester City.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to bring this in from Paul, who emailed to say, it pains me to say it because I love him, but it's no longer 2023 and John Stones is no longer up to being a part of City, if City are going to get back to being the dominant force in English football. He's a great player when he's fit, but for two seasons now, he can't stay fit. It's harsh because it's not his fault, but it's time to say thank you for everything and go our separate ways. Mike, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, no, absolutely not. I think that's... You could have said that about John Stones in 2020, when he first came to City, and if you'd have got rid of him then, I think on the same basis you'd have got rid of him then, you'd have never had treble winning John Stones. And all right, you can say he won one season he's look, go back to the first half of Real Madrid last week. All right, again, I know the question is largely over fitness, but go back to the first half of Real Madrid last week, when fans all season have been crying out for a fit John Stones to play in the Rodri role, the middle. And then that back four as well. I remember I was with Ben Mee that night, and I turned to him and I said, "That is City. That's the City we know." That first half was the Manchester City. We knew Real Madrid were going to get chances, so I wasn't concerned about how many of those there were. But the way City were connecting looked like Manchester City. And in the second half, John Stones has to go back in defence. Ake can't do an hour. Akanji's off at half time. Suddenly the whole thing's unsettled. You've got competition going to win the midfield, and the game's gone. John Stones is still world class. John Stones has still got it. He's had a bad season, but then, you know, if we're talking like that, then Ruben Diaz, I saw him out of the position a couple of times last night, and he's had injuries. Are we binning him off in the summer? I don't think there's anyone in Manchester City that would want to do that. So, there are some ageing players in that squad that do, I think, need to be moved on, but John Stones is not one of them.
Yeah, fitness-wise, Kieran, he, as Mike says, he's shown that what he can offer when he's fit. Is the problem that he can't stay fit, though? If it's as Paul says, it's two seasons now where he's barely been in the team.
It is. It's one of those where Hart says, because I absolutely adore him, and I think I don't know one single City fan who doesn't, or even, you know, City kind of observer, just look at him, and you know he's been a wonderful signing, a great servant. He's a gorgeous man. He just exudes cool and calm. And what he did in the 2023 season, 22-23 season, just like we wouldn't have won the treble without him. It was absolutely magnificent, you know. But I think I saw something like that was his 21st injury since he moved to City or something. And I don't want to turn into one of those. You know, head versus heart kind of fans, because you know I'll back my heart and I'll always back my kind of love for players. And do you know what saddens me a little bit at the moment is, and this isn't just because you know we're losing all the time, but there is a slight lack of a core bunch of lads who you feel a real affinity for in terms of, you know, he's one of the boys, he's a good guy, like. I really like him as a character. I don't know whether
Stones is that.
And I always remember, do you remember the Joe Hart image after the playoff? Was it against Bucharest?
Yeah.
Because I wrote, when we still had time to write for Typical City, I wrote an article. A picture paints 1,000 words, and I wrote exactly 1,000 words about that image with Joe Hart crushed.
I hadn't clocked that it was exactly 1,000 words. You absolute nose.
I know, I'm such a dickhead. but Joe Hart looked absolutely crestfallen because he realised it was kind of going to be his last game. And Joe Hart had his arms around him, like screaming in his face, buzzing, because he realised he qualified for the Champions League. And I assume that would have been his first Champions League outing, really. And now it's kind of gone to the circle where we're looking at John Stones going head over heart, should we move him on? But in this particular case, I think he's such a character. When he's fit, he's unbelievable. We just need to sort of, I'm sure the doctors have been trying this over the past 6 or 7 years, but we just need to, I don't know, whatever they're doing, try harder. Yeah. Wrap him in finer cotton wool it needs a change, because
get your cotton wool from Waitrose instead of from Tesco. Yeah,
but it will come when Pep is so kind of dogmatic, and you know, you saw how ruthless he was in with Joe Hart. Is it going to come to a stage where he's just like, John, I love you, I adore you, fuck me, man, you can't stay fit, like. And as we've said earlier on, all the players are a year older, and when age catches up with all of them, and Stones' injuries and age is catching up,
How many years has he been with City now? Is it
2016? Yeah, 2016.
Same as
Pep,
2016.
Yeah.
So there's two sides here. So I was once told that a decade service to the club is really well thought of because it kind of shows you're there for a little bit more than the money, kind of thing. So and obviously you've got the loyalty there. So all right, if he does next season, then he's got 10 years service. However, I've just looked, his contract's up next summer, and he's 30. And do you therefore say, if you're a business, this is your last summer to get money? Because someone will take John Stones on. He's world class. He's a brilliant, brilliant defender and midfielder. So do you, because I have thought about this a little bit this season, is it likely De Bruyne signs a new contract?
Probably not. Yeah.
So why didn't you sell him in the summer to Saudi? You know, if there were the Saudi, I mean, I think Kevin's denied, hasn't he, that there was ever any talks or ever any interest. But if that option was on the table, you could have got, you know, a nice attractive Saudi bid, made a bit of money, because De Bruyne, you know, he's not cutting it this season as he has in the treble year or, you know, whatever other seasons that he's been amazing in. So I just wonder if that's the debate and you have to put your business head on and take your City heart away, do you say, right, John, we've had an attractive offer. You've been a brilliant servant. Everyone loves you. Thanks and goodbye.
How about, as the ante to that, how about the stuff you can't put a value on, as Kieran says, the stuff in the dressing room, the stuff as the part of the team, even when he's not available, what he does behind the scenes for the team? That you can't put a monetary value on that, so it's not as easy to just say, well, let's take the bid.
His name's chanted every single game, whether he's, you know, whether he's in or out of the squad, or whether he's, you know, on the injury table for 3 months, he's still, you know, everybody's still at the Johnny Stones.
Is he the new Scott Carson?
Well, yeah. if he stayed about to that age, I'd be happy enough. But it was just, do you know what? Funny enough, it was the thought of seeing him, you know, in another kit or playing for another club, because a big club would come in for him, you'd imagine. You know, Arteta would probably be sniffing around him, which he seems to be doing with Ex-City a lot at the moment. Like, and I would hate that. I would absolutely detest that. So I think, yeah, keep him until he can't play anymore, which apparently is now. And stop him going anywhere else. See, De Bruyne, did Sam Lee say the other day De Bruyne would probably be more likely to go to America than Saudi now?
Yeah, I think so.
I think I could cope with that. Walker, as far away from my sight as possible, has been a pleasure. And City lasted longer in the Champions League than Milan did, so by about 2 hours.
Yeah. So silver linings everywhere this episode. Yeah. I want to end this first part with some positivity, because Mike, you said about being impressed by Omar Mamouche so far. Hat-trick against Newcastle. We shouldn't let that go unrecognised. In the bin fire of Wednesday, we shouldn't let the goodness of Saturday disappear. So Mamouche, nice little hat-trick for him there.
Yeah, and you know, there were the first goal was lovely. I mean, Pete, flowing, well, Edison, Marmoush, chip, goal, lovely, lovely. But, you know, his ability to cut in for his second, deflection, yeah, but they all count. And the third one, first time power hit, wasn't it? I just think he looks lively, sharp, pace, bit of skill, decent free kick on him, as we saw on Wednesday night. So I think of the four that came in, he's the one that I'm like, he's hit the ground running, which for January signings, we said, is really hard. Nico Gonzalez is probably second if we're ranking him, and Kuzinov, then Vita Hayes, who we just really have not seen enough of and was bullied against Leyton Orient. So, I think there's something there. And if they can find, because obviously the thing that annoyed Alvarez was playing number two and playing second fiddle. If Marmoush has clearly had to come to... He knows that. He knows... I mean, Haaland's just signed 9.5 years. You're not going to be number nine every week. Mm. But if City can find that little role behind him, but then it raises all sorts of questions. Because if he sits in the 10 role, then what, you know, again, you question Phil Foden's best position, which we think would number 10, but we've barely seen it this year. But if somehow they can find the balance, then I think City have found a gem. So far, looking like he's worth 60 million. Obviously, a long, long time to go yet, but impressed with what we've seen.
Yeah. Kieran, I don't want to dob you in it, but you were in New York for this game against Newcastle, so were you annoyed to have missed his hat-trick?
Yeah, really annoyed. It was 10 o'clock in the morning there or something, so I was with 40 guys, teenagers, and I was checking my phone, and I was like, Marouche has got a 13-minute hat-trick, and just literally not one of them gave a shit. Like, so and then with all mad VPN stuff and that, I couldn't even really see the highlights. It was one of them where I was delighted to be winning like that, and you know, delighted to be far. But you know, you just would have loved to be out of the game. And then when I eventually caught up with the highlights, it looked good. There was an interesting. Do you know what? Actually, I looked at it and went, there are some tactics here, which seems to be like a first for a long, long time. and when Haaland went down injured, you could see Pep's frustration because I reckon, you know, he'd spotted something that they could have used on Wednesday night. And, you know, Haaland going down. So Haaland was dropping deep and allowing Marmoush. Was there a sort of false nine involvement?
Not really. It was just that Haaland was dropping deep, opening the space up for Marmoush to run into, and he was going, thank you very much, because Newcastle were pressing quite high up.
Right, okay. Because that ruined the song that I was working on then.
Go on.
Score Marmoush, score Marmoush. Can you play the false nine row? That's all I've got so far.
Yeah.
Thanks, lads. It's been a pleasure. See you later. Bye.
Yeah, I don't really know how to take it from there. So, no. Should we move to the? Should we hear from Danny Teato, Kieran? Should we bail you out that way?
Do you want to put an appeal out to the listeners there to if you've got any more? if you can.
No, he really doesn't need to put that appeal out. No,
not really. I don't really want those emails. To be honest with you, mate. Right. If you're happy for me to give your phone number and email address out, then
I might disappear to New York again. I think.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
As we've talked about already, City could do with some steel in the middle at the moment, and there's one player from the past who certainly brought that. Signing in 1998, as City began their first ever season in the third tier, Danny Teato came in as a tough-tackling left-sided player. Across his six seasons at Main Road, he racked up six red cards, four of them straight red cards, so you can never accuse him of not fighting for the team. I've been speaking to him to get his memories, starting with how he arrived at the club.
I was alone on Stoke, but previously to that, it was a few years before that, I'd actually come over and had a trial at Manchester City, and David Clark was a manager, and he sort of overlooked me sort of thing at the time. So I sort of went back to Australia, ended up actually after a season, probably got a move over to Italy, and then from Italy got a loan move to Stoke City, and then played Stoke City for about 8 months. And then I think we played against Manchester City a couple of times, and Joe Royal was the manager at the time. And yeah, and on the off season, he spoke to my agent and asked if I was willing to come along and join City. And it was a no-brainer. And as soon as I looked into the history of the club, I signed on the dotted line and worked my way back over to Manchester.
Yeah, what was Joe talking about for what he wanted to achieve at City? Because obviously that kind of half season you were on loan at Stoke, Stoke went down, but City went down as well. It was kind of like a club that very much needed rebuilding at the time. What was Joe talking about?
Yeah, so that's basically the way he sold it to me as well. He goes, you know, it's been a very good club in the past. We've ran into a few issues now, and we've sort of gone on the decline. We need to rebuild this club and this squad. They had to sort of offload a lot of the top earners at the time as well. They were making some big money there at the time as well at City. So it was a fresh start. And he goes, you know, I'm willing to take a chance on you. You're hungry. You're desperate. It seems like you really want to, you know, have a crack at this football over here in the UK. And you know, I want to build on this club and build on the team, and try and build the strongest possible squad, and can we get promoted, you know, back to back, you know, the first few seasons and get the club back into the Premier League. So again, he was always very positive, you know, towards me and towards the club and all the players that he brought in. So yeah, I took my hat off to Joe Royal because yeah, he was very, very good towards me as well.
Yeah, what was that early kind of period like? Do you remember your first goal? I remember it being at Pride Park.
You know what? It's hard because I didn't score too many goals for City. So because again, I was sort of a bit of a versatile player that played left back, left midfield, left wing, and you know, so I was shuffled around that left hand side quite a bit. But yeah, I remember Pride Park. I think it was against Derby the goal sort of thing. So that was always great. But yeah, it was just. It was just tremendous, you know, even in the early days, that first season, especially playing at Main Road in the old second division, and you still got 32,000 people turning up, you know, when we're playing against, you know, like the teams like, no disrespect to Lincoln and these other sort of sides, and, you know, yeah, that their stadium mainly holds, you know, 5,000-10,000 at the time, and, you know, we're selling out our stadiums at home. So there was always a big emphasis, you know, when we played at home that we needed to put a good performance in and win those games. But every team that turned up, because they are playing in what at the time was such a good stadium, a big stadium in front of a lot of supporters, they really put in a good shift, and we really had to be on our game every week.
You had a reputation of being quite a tough tackling player. I remember certainly when you came in, it was very much a case of, oh, okay, this guy's going to battle for us. He'll really get to war for this team. Is that something you always try? Was that like a way to kind of get everybody on side as much as kind of start pulling everybody in the same direction?
Yeah, I think that was instilled that in me from a young age, from through my father actually, just to be a bit tenacious and have that never die attitude sort of thing, and we'll win at all costs. So it was something that, you know, that I sort of got, you know, through my younger years, but then carried it through into my you know, into my professional career as well, and that sort of did endear me to every, you know, every supporter and every club that I played for. That you know, I yeah, some of the tackles probably were a little bit over the top that I'd done, and yeah, I think there in that first season when I was there, Joe Royal did pull me aside and say, listen, you know, I can't have you getting sent off so many times, and we need you in the side. So he was sort of, I had to work on that myself that season. But he sort of said, listen, if you can just tone it down a little bit and set a standard for the rest of the boys as well, and show that you're committed and you're willing to chase everything and tackle everything, that's good. But try not to cross that line, you know. So I worked on that, and basically that's why I didn't end up playing the Gillingham game. I think I got red carded a couple of weeks before that, so I was suspended for the Gillingham game. So that's why I didn't play in that. So he said, listen, go back to Australia, sort yourself out, come back. We're getting, you know, after they got promoted, you know, he sort of said, listen, come back. I want you to come back and be ready, and you're going to be a major, you know, part of my plans again moving forward in Division One.
Yeah, was that a difficult thing to kind of take at the time? Because it's obviously the club is not the ideal game at Wembley. It's a third tier playoff final, but it is still a major game, and it's turned out to be an iconic game in City's history. And it's one of those that I guess you, like as a player, even like at whatever level, you want to be playing at a game like that at Wembley.
Yeah, for sure. Like I was pretty gutted that I missed out that opportunity to be at Wembley and be involved in that Gillingham game. But yeah, I was, you know, I was praying and yeah, I was hoping that we were going to get through that game and get the result. And yeah, what a game! It sort of went down in history, you know. And not to be a part of it was a bit of kick in the guts. But that's football. You just got to deal with those scenarios. And in the end, yeah, I was just happy with for the players and for the club and the coaching staff that the boys got the result at the end of the day and got us up into the next division.
Were you in Australia for that game then? Did you have to kind of watch it from afar? What was that like? Because like, you're so far away.
Yeah, so Joe Royal sort of said, listen, he goes, well, you're not involved for, you know, you're suspended for 3-4 games. He goes, listen, he goes, you know what, get yourself back to Australia. Get yourself sorted, you know, and have a good break, and just get yourself ready for the following seasons, whatever happens. So I had a lot of family and friends around, and we're watching it, and I think the supporters, yeah, I think everyone and myself was on edge there, especially going all the way down to the penalty shootout. So it was pretty epic. I think we celebrated pretty hard. I think that night as well. So it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, so the next season comes along. What were you and the squad, and what was Joe talking about with the squad for what you wanted to achieve that season? Because obviously, newly promoted side, still a club of City size wants to be in the Premier League, but you are still a newly promoted side in Division One. So what were the aims?
Yeah, well, that's what Joe sort of said straight away in pre-season. He didn't stay back and hold back on the squad that he had. He started, you know, looking and bringing other players in, because he knew we needed to step up once again. So even in those six seasons that I was there was that many players, you know, that were coming and going at the time. You know, if I was to probably count on my hands in those six seasons, there would have been like 40, 50 players, I think, that came through the squad at the time. So it was never sit back. It was always, can we build? Can we get stronger? So, and Joe and the coaching staff, they did that. They brought in more players. We got stronger. And as we've shown, we actually, you know, worked out well for us straight away. We ended up winning games or dominating games. We're playing a good brand of football, high intensity, scoring a lot of goals. And that got us to the position where, you know, we got to the position where we got promoted to the Premier League.
Yeah. So Blackburn then, pre-match, how are you feeling? Joe Royle's named his team. You're in it. How are you feeling about it?
Yeah, the lead up to that game that week was, he said, listen, boys, we've got a great opportunity. Let's work hard, you know, through the whole week. Let's see who's gonna push for places. There's places up for grabs. Let's keep on working hard and see what happens on the weekend. It was a great preparation for us. Everyone was confident that week. We had a pretty strong squad. There wasn't any injuries, I don't think, at the time. So we went into the game quite confident. Just rolling up on the team bus there at Blackburn and seeing how many of our supporters were there at the ground and also up on the hill through the gaps of the stadium. You could see, you know, especially when we sort of came through the dugout and walked out onto the field and we saw the City supporters up on the hill. We're thinking, shit, I hope we don't let those guys down today. You know, it would have broken our heart, but it was something that we wanted to try to make sure that was going to be a memorable day for the City supporters and also for us as players.
Yeah, for you personally as well, was part of not playing in the playoff final, was that a big driving force that week to make sure you were in the team for this Blackburn game?
Yeah, you do. I think as a player, you want to be involved as many games as possible, and especially when they're vital games that can make a difference in the club and what division you're going to be in as well. So yeah, that was something that, you know, that I tried to work on through the season, and yeah, I was fortunate enough that Joe Royle selected me for that day. And like I said, it was a pretty intense game. I don't know how we ended up winning it in the end. You know, I don't know how many times I think Blackburn hit the post and crossbar that day. But yeah, you know, soon, as a player, when we saw the balls not going in and coming off the post and crossbar and that, deep down, as much as I was shitting myself, but I just knew luck was on our side that day. And in the end, we ended up coming away and nicking that victory off them, which, yeah, in hindsight, we probably didn't deserve, but I'm glad that we did get it in the end of the day.
I mean, you talk about the ball hitting the post and everything, and the amount of times it bounced the right way for City that day. Do you get a sense sometimes when that's happening? You get a sense of, we can't lose this. Like, it's like, even though we are not winning the game right now, like things are just falling our way.
Yeah, again, you always sense it as a footballer. You know, when you're under the pump a little bit and the teams are putting you under pressure and they're not taking their chances and we're riding our luck a little bit, as I say. And then we sort of, you know, in the second half sort of go down, you know, the game sort of changed on its head and we kept on working hard and grinding. We had a little bit of luck. I think there was an own goal there as well from one of the Blackburn boys. But, we kept on believing. And that's what Joe Royle said to us at halftime. He said, boys, he goes, I don't know how we're still in this game, but he goes, if you work hard enough in the second half, you can actually, win this game. So, and that's what we did. We kept on. We didn't drop our heads, and we kept on working hard as a team and as a squad. And thankfully, at the end of that game, when the whistle was blown, everyone ran on, and it was just mayhem. And it was a great experience. It was something that I'd never forget.
Yeah, is it nice to play in a game where towards the end of it, everybody's the fans have relaxed so much that they feel confident enough to do a conga down the side of the pitch? Is that like when the party atmosphere is like that? Like, what's that experience like?
Yeah, I think that's one thing that I remember quite clearly as well is looking across, you know, on the other side of the field, because I was on the left hand side and everyone was doing the conga on the right hand side down that side there, and I'm thinking, okay, they're celebrating now. I think we're right. We're pretty comfortable now. So to see that and see the people up on the hill and that everyone sort of sort of tearing down when the whistle blew as well, just to get into the stadium as well, was something that I won't forget. So yeah, again, I was just wrapped for us as a team, and also for the supporters as well, that's gone through, not hardships, but, you know, the season, you know, prior leading up and then into that one, and then to give them that reward that we're going to be playing back in the Premier League was pretty satisfying.
Yeah, so that obviously now City back in the Premier League, and I guess was that kind of, I don't want to sell it kind of too grandiose, but was it kind of the dream of this Aussie lad that had come to England to play in the Premier League? So like you've now achieved that aim.
Yeah, for sure. It's something that I always wanted to achieve. Growing up, sort of always watching the English Premier Division as well. Always sort of followed it. Always watched the Serie A as well, the Italian league as well. Sort of got Italian background. So I always wanted to try and to make it at the pinnacle of whatever country I played in. So to get to that opportunity to play in the Premier League, against some of the best players in the world was always a dream for me. And to do it with City was it was a pleasure, especially that Joe and I sort of came as a sort of younger lad and had the opportunity to come through the club, and the roller coaster ride that we had was pretty amazing.
Yeah, what was Keegan like as a manager compared to Joe? Because there was a style change on the pitch. Was there much of a style change behind the scenes?
I think Joe Royal sort of, he sort of didn't have the money given to him that Kevin Keegan did. He sort of had to build his squad around the whole everyone. He didn't have just two or three players who were standouts and were going to win your games. He made sure it was a squad related thing. And Kevin Keegan's style was a little bit different. He got to spend a little bit of money. He brought a lot of flair players in, players who were going to score us a lot of goals. We're always going to play on the front foot, and if we concede two or three, we're going to make sure that we score four or five. You know what I mean? So he made sure that he sort of brought in the players that were going to win us games and score a lot of goals. And again, the players that he did bring in, it was entertaining football, and I think that's why a lot of people at that time when we got relegated enjoyed that season when Kevin Keegan took over, because again, the brand of football was pretty special, and we had some amazing players there as well.
Yeah, do you remember the red card against Norwich and kind of everything that went on there? What happened? What happened there?
I think I've sort of gone to take off and I forget what Norwich play. He's grabbed my shirt and pulled me back. I've swung around and to my defence, I didn't catch him. You know what I mean? I didn't catch him, but he's gone down holding his face. And the linesman's waving his flag, and the referees come over, and they've said that I've actually elbowed the player in the face, which I didn't. But at the time, there was no VAR. They had cameras there, but it wasn't as focused as it is these days. So again, I think they've done me that I've caught him, but the intention was there, but I missed him. I was a little bit upset that I got that red card and walking off. The Norwich bench was there, and there was a bunch of Lucozade bottles in those racks, and decided to volley it into their dugout, got them all up out of their bench, and started having a bit of a push and shove, and Kevin Keegan come over and grabbed me around the neck and started pushing me out of the tunnel. So it was a little bit heated. So it was something that I probably regret a little bit doing that.
I don't know. Does it when with Kevin Keegan's management? I don't know. Does it seem sometimes like once you fall out of favour, there's not really much opportunity to get back? Because it kind of felt like as he kind of brought in new players again for the move to the new stadium, it felt like other players weren't given the chance. Is that fair?
I had a couple of falling out with Kevin Keegan, but we sort of patched the first one up. I think it was that one when I got sent off against Blackburn actually at Main Road that I sort of went over the top, and it was a pretty cheeky challenge. So we had a bit of a falling out over that one, but we ended up coming back and sorting that issue out. I think then that following season, I, you know, done a couple other little things that, that he didn't really like. And then, yeah, I think when we moved to the Etihad, my time was sort of limited there as well, how many games I played. And I knew I was, on the outer. And, I had to, again, as much as I'd love the club and wanted to stay there, Kevin Keegan had different ideas and was bringing in different players at the time. And I knew my time was up and had to get a move out of there if I want to continue playing football over in the UK. So that's fortunately, that's the way football is. And I had to move on and join Leicester at the time.
Yeah. Now, obviously, we're talking. You're back in Australia these days. What are you up to these days? I think a lot of listeners will be interested to know because it's been a while since we've heard about you over here. So what's been happening in the world of Danny Teato?
Sort of when I moved back here, sort of played a little bit of football here back in Australia as well. When I came back and moved back to Melbourne originally, and had my family there and my wife and had my kids. They all sort of grew up there as well, and then. Moved back to the Gold Coast. So I'm living on the Gold Coast where the weather's a little bit nicer. I think the Melbourne weather's a little bit like Manchester. So I decided to go where the weather's a little bit warmer. So I'm up in Queensland, enjoying my life. So I've done a little bit of coaching of my son's side as I'm coming through, and done a little bit of coaching with Brisbane Roar at one stage as well, just as assistant coach and stuff like that for a couple of years. But coaching really wasn't my sort of passion and something that I really wanted to go back into a full-time sort of role. So just got into a little bit of motorsports and cars and bikes and just that sort of stuff, really. And then, my wife's got an education business that she started up, and I'm helping out little bits and pieces as well. So again, just enjoying the lifestyle of the Gold Coast between jet skiing and boating and fast cars and racing around car tracks and that. That's my lifestyle these days.
Oh, it sounds horrible. Sounds absolutely horrible. Do you still get a chance to see City?
Well, I do. I do follow them. Again, that's especially the brand of football they play. Even after I left, and just the way the club has excelled and the way the club is, it's amazing, to watch that brand of football, maybe not of late, but just watching them over the years and the success that they've had and also all the titles they've won and the treble, the other year as well. You cannot but admire that team and that club now. And for me to watch that club, the way they've moved forward, I'm just so happy for the supporters, after a lot of years of a lot of heartache, in the years gone by, but now they're one of the strongest and best clubs in the world. So for that club to do what they're doing now is amazing.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Danny Teato speaking to me about his time at Main Road. The full interview with an extra 15 minutes of discussion about the back-to-back promotions and his time playing under Kevin Keegan at City is now available for Patreon backers. Head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast if you would like to listen. And you were both really excited to hear that Danny Teato was on this one. Mike, we talked about the Norwich red card with him there. Like the first thing I said when Danny Teato was on the show, you went, that red card against Norwich.
It's just... Oh, it's so good. It's everything about it. Not only the tackle, which is horrendous.
It's the fact that he says in the interview there, like, I didn't connect with him, but yeah, the intention was there, but I didn't connect.
the Norwich player goes flying, and then it's the whole water bottle incident afterwards, booting that. It's Kevin Keegan having to restrain him. I think I love that game. Not for that moment, it is iconic, but also... I think the Carlo Nash overarm throw to Ayle Berkovic and Ali Mann's commentary of doing his best to go alone. Oh, brilliant. Yeah, it's just in my early days of watching Manchester City, that it's just a moment that stands out. It's just it's made not only through the brilliant goal, but made through Danny Teato and that challenge and the red card.
If that doesn't spark it off, then that game doesn't happen. Yeah, you're right. Kieran, there's the other challenge in there. This is the red card against Blackburn was less infamous. But again, City came from 2-0 behind in that game after he'd been sent off. But it was like a two-footed challenge that connected with David Thompson in the groin. And he's described it in that interview there as cheeky.
Yeah, never touched him, Rev. Making the ball, with the ball, Rev. Yeah, what a little devil. It's funny, actually. I was thinking about Mike saying there about the kicking of the bottles. You know when Pep does something now where he kicks a bottle or throws a bottle and you can see him running over dead quick to apologise. Oh, I'm sorry. It's like, get a bit of Teatro back in your life.
Yeah, none of that for Danny, was there.
Yeah. Just love that. And you don't want to keep comparing it to kind of now, but when you watch something and witness something so toothless and spineless last night, I'm not saying you wanted two-footed lunges and red cards left, right and centre, but just that little bit of fighting spirit, that little bit of, you know, sly, snide devilment, and, you know, Teatro just, like, completely encompassed that.
Can I tell you who I think's got that in this, like, one of the new signings?
Abby Kush.
Yeah, Kusinov's a bit of a clumper, isn't he?
Yeah.
He leaves a foot in every now and then.
Yeah, he does. He but, like, it's funny. I'm going to completely contradict myself here because he needs to calm down. Like,
So this sort of stuff's only fun when it's nostalgic.
Yes, exactly. Yes, you've nailed it. Yeah, that's it. In the now, he'll give you a heart attack, that kid. That debut of his is so fucking funny. Like when he gave away the first goal for Chelsea, basically with his first touch in a City shirt, and then emptied Cole Palmer 2 minutes later. Like, so good. What was it I said to you the other day? I can't wait to do a cult hero special on him in about 7 years on the Patreon. Yeah. He's already a cult hero. Like,
yeah.
But no, Teatro also scorer of the best disallowed goal of all time.
Yes. Yeah. Which, annoyingly, when I forgot, because I'll let everybody into a bit of a secret. This interview came off the back of we're doing something special on the podcast for the Blackburn game at the end of this season. And I wanted Danny Teatro to speak about that game with quality audio, because the only time we'd spoke to him in the past was over the phone. Mm. And I asked him about that Middlesbrough game on the phone, but I completely forgot to ask it in this interview. So it's not there. And like, of all the things that you could forget to ask about, the greatest disallowed goal of all time, it's like right up there at Middlesbrough again, as the Alana one.
Yeah, they were a bogey side, weren't they? Well, like, so it was given as offside, even though he picked it up, you know, in his own half and then ran the full length and scored.
Yeah, the power of Darren Huckerby on the far side was what did it.
Outrageous.
Yeah. Well, if you thought that was mad and what daft things can happen, Spurs and Liverpool next. So let's get into that. If you could, Mike, if you could handpick two fixtures to make an awful week in any season, these two might be it. So in this season, what does it mean?
buckle down, find a shelter, and just sit in there for a week. I think. Do you know? I was going to say City raised their game against the big sides. But then again, last night might say otherwise. This is where it's exciting. What on earth do I say here? What's the prediction? What's the message? I have an element of confidence about the game at the Etihad against Liverpool. I think it was really interesting this week to hear Andy Robertson talk about nerves and how the Liverpool team are maybe feeling it. And can't remember who it was on Five Live the other week or last week was saying that, you know, these Liverpool fans have not seen a Premier League title. When they won it in COVID, there was no fans. So they don't know how to behave in, you know, in this situation where their side are favourites and just have to follow it through. That necessarily won't transcend because it's at the Etihad and not Anfield, but it is really interesting to hear that side of things. So maybe City can do that. I haven't seen Villa Liverpool, so I don't know how tough Liverpool found it last night. But it's the Spurs factor, isn't it? It's the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Is it one? Is it two wins there in history and only a couple of goals? And Spurs are desperate as well. The only thing in a battle of two injury-ridden clubs, the only thing might be that City's injuries are not as extensive as Spurs, and that might help them. But if they're Jekyll and Hyde and play world-class against Liverpool, then I'll back them to lose against Spurs.
Yeah, Kieran, Liverpool starting off there. Low-key, they've had a bit of a wobble lately. One win in the last four, three wins in the last seven. Does that give you any cause for optimism? At the record at the Etihad isn't fantastic. City are still pretty good against Liverpool at the Etihad. Does that give you optimism, or does the Jekyll and Hyde factor of City kind of weigh that out?
I think I've got optimism. Yeah, I think I've got optimism because we're out of the Champions League and we can just play with a bit of freedom. Like, God knows where we're going to finish in this league, but it's probably not going to be the top. And we could just ruffle them up a little bit, but nothing to play for in Europe. Midweek's, well, I know not really because we have Spurs this midweek, but for the most part for the rest of the season, midweeks are going to be back up. Two difficult teams that we really struggle against. Let's just fucking go for them, like, because there's nothing else to be up to.
I would go to war for you.
Oh, man, brilliant. Thank you very much. But at the same time, right, and here's the nice thing. If Liverpool win, it keeps Arsenal at bay from the title. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think absolute awful scenario is Liverpool winning this league. But worst case scenario is Arsenal winning this league. I could not think of anything worse. And I can't believe, you know, the hatred we had for, you know, for Liverpool the past few years, the Klopp and Pep rivalry, that, you know, the awful games, that, you know, the tension between the two, going right down to the wire. But it wasn't really respectful because there were a few dodgy bits going on here and there. But I think all that stay humble stuff and all that kind of like shite off the pitch nonsense, childish, immature, teenage bollocks, you know, I just could not stomach Arsenal winning this league. So I think City should just go for it.
Leave plenty of gaps.
Leave plenty of gaps, yeah. And then it'd be nice to try something new. Hopefully Haaland's back and maybe, you know, maybe pick up where we left off with Marmoush. Can he play the false nine role? And I don't know. I'm sort of weirdly in a... Bob Toole used to say, you know, when we were like 1-0 up or whatever, he was like, I wish we'd just get another goal, you know, in prior seasons. I wish we'd get another goal just so I can mentally clock out. And that's what I feel has happened last night. You know, the FA Cup will clock in and we'll lock in, but I think for the rest of the Premier League and just get through it. The season, apart from the cup, is sort of gone, more or less. It's just about making sure we get over the line into fourth, hoping that Arsenal don't win. I always enjoyed asking when Liverpool fans talked about how brilliant that season was in 2020. I always loved saying to them, when's the parade? Because there literally was no parade. So it was a double-edged dig.
Just on while we're on records as well, Mike, you mentioned Spurs and how bad it is for City there. Therefore, 5 wins in 15. For context, City's form is 8 wins in 13. So City are managing their injury crisis quite well. Low key, actually doing all right. They've won over half of the games in the last 13. Spurs obviously just beaten United. It feels like that game in particular is possibly the most unpredictable game that we'll get this season, because you don't know which City are going to turn up, you don't know which Spurs are going to turn up, and both teams could leave a lot of space.
Yeah, I think Spurs-Man United on Sunday, I said it is actually possible both teams could lose that game, as in they'll both try and find a way to lose it if they can. And obviously Spurs won, and so Spurs beat Manchester United, Manchester United beat Manchester City, which means Spurs will win this game. in that lovely, simple world that football works in. Look, Tottenham Hotspur Stadium's a great place to... I really enjoy going on. It's a lovely stadium, the world-class stadium, and it is a noise, and it is hostile. But I also think if City score that first goal, the Spurs' heads might go. The fans will think, here we go again. And City might have a much more comfortable night. First of all, it's about surviving Sunday and hope, you know, someone else doesn't pick up an injury, particularly in Manchester City's defence, and get the confidence. They need a lift after last night by what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing. The fans need a lift. I was seeing people leaving the Bernabeu a little bit early last night and calling it a disgrace, and there's an element of heat at the moment, and there's an element of
short memories, really.
Yeah, there's a little bit, and like I say, you get taste of success, and you know, you expect your side to do better. So I think they need the lift. So if Sunday can provide that, then obviously you go into Wednesday with a load of confidence, just like we went into last night with a load of confidence for Manchester City, given what had happened against Newcastle. It's one of those where I know you've asked for predictions, and I just don't know. It's one of those where you're just thinking, God, it genuinely could be 4-0 Spurs, it could be 4-0 City, it could be 0-0. I don't know. I actually don't know.
Yeah, well, it's time to put your money where your mouth is, because disappointment in Madrid. But there was a silver lining in that, just like the first leg. We had a win on the charity of that. It was my correct 3-1 defeat prediction that did it. And it took the total for the season up to £1,115. We are collecting for the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group, and they'll be outside the Etihad in the usual spot under the bridge near Asda up until about 4 p.m. on Sunday ahead of the game with Liverpool. William Hill is giving us 3 £10 correct score singles to try and win some more money. We will start with that game against Liverpool. Mike, what have you gone for?
I've struggled this week with these predictions. I'm going to say 1-1, and that's purely that I don't want to stick my neck out and say if City play, you know, I think Newcastle were poor to some extent, but if City play as well as they did against Newcastle, they'll be fine and they'll win. But it's Liverpool and anything can happen, and it's feisty, it's an enjoyable rivalry. So I've gone 1-1, and I'm being so BBC, I'm sitting on the fence.
Excellent. 7-1 and £70 if you're right. I thought about it, thought exactly the same, and went for 1-1, and then you took it. I also went for 2-2, but Kieran?
Yes, I've gone for 2-2.
Yep, that's 9-1 and £90. So I split the difference and went for a 2-1 Liverpool win, because I keep winning money when City lose recently. So I thought, why not keep that trend going? 17-2 and £85 if I'm right. And that brings us to the unpredictable Spurs away. I will start with a 1-1 draw. That's, again, 17-2 and £85 if I'm right. Kieran, you seem fairly optimistic about this one.
Well, I am optimistic, but actually it's funny because the first score that came to my head was 4-0 the City. And I don't know why, and then I talked myself out of it and I've gone for 3-2 the City.
3-2 City is 12-1.
I just think the season's going to be bonkers from now on. Just unpredictable, shackles off, go mad, no pressure, bit of freedom, and fucking ruin Spurs.
If only. £120 if you're right, though. Mike, what are you having?
Spurs have got a slightly easier game this weekend. They take on Ipswich, so it's kind of I'm kind of thinking like who comes out worse, who has the tougher game, and now that impacts, you know, 72 hours later and stripped back squads and stuff. And I've had to go for Spurs 2-0. That place, the form City are in, the Jekyll and Hyde nature. If they do well on Sunday, then you just fear that maybe it just falls down a little bit on the Saturday. So I've gone for a Spurs 2-0 win.
Yeah, it's when you say it like that, I can see it happening. The bookies, though, don't really see it happening. 28-1, £280 if you're right. So at least it'll be a consolation if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on how to gamble responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. Now then, Mike, you are in for an absolute treat at this point. Pick a number for us, 1, 2, or 3.
Let's go 3, shall we? Nice and high.
Number 3. Okay, this is Higgy's audience question jingle.
Have you got a theory on City that needs closer inspection? Or just something to ask us? Because this is your section. Read something odd into Pep's tone or inflection? Or a novel idea to improve team selection? Sick of these jingles? Well, give it a mention, or maybe something worthwhile to bring to our attention. Let us know, Blues, because it's your listeners' questions. Oh, yes, it really is.
You don't get that on Radio Manchester, do you?
Well, it's better than, what is it? Score a goal, Marmouche, I can tell you that.
Mike.
It's shots fired.
It's score Marmouche, can you play the false nine role?
Get in touch, Blue Sky, look for Blue Moon Podcast. You can email contact@bluemoonpodcast.com as well. David got in touch on Blue Sky to say, I've just discovered a typical City fact that I never knew thanks to this week's The Knowledge column in The Guardian. In 1971-72, City ended their season top of the First Division, but it was mathematically impossible for them to win the league, as others still had games to play. One of them was second versus third, who were both a point behind and both with a better goal average. So whatever the result of that game, one of them would have to go above City. Not sure you could get more typical City than finishing top of the league, but it being impossible to win the title. So the question is, what's your favourite typical City moment or fact? Kieran, typical. You look confused there. Are you trying to work the maths of this out?
Yeah, I've got the question on my phone from David there. I don't get it. One of them was second and third.
So what you're mistakenly thinking is that all the games would happen on the final day at the last time, but back in the 70s, they didn't. Teams could finish their season.
Well, I found that out 2 days ago on the Crystal Palace games, or Heaven and Hell that we did.
Yeah. And this was one of those situations. So City finished their season. Their final game had them finish top of the table, but second versus third was going to happen after it. And the distance between them and the goal averages meant that whatever the result of that game, one of those two would have to go above City.
Oh, that's absolutely incredible. Did you know that?
I didn't know that, no, either. I found that out in that same knowledge call.
Oh, that's absolutely amazing. That is typical City as fuck, isn't it? Like, I just love all the classic ones, really. It just has made it so much fun being a Bert all these years. And one of those things, you know, whatever can go wrong will go wrong, but in the most unexpected way. And going back to Mike's question again about does it not make it a bit exciting, like it's frustrating this year because it's not really typical City. It's like we got out of a pattern and now it's just we're shooting ourselves in the foot and throwing away wins all the time. But actual classic City. So yeah, I love that one. Obviously Liverpool, Alan Ball.
Wasting time. Yeah,
wasting time thinking we were safe. I just love little ones like the Pollock on goal. I also
wasn't very little at the time. Well, mate, I'm not going to lie.
Well, yeah, for sure. City winning 5-2 and still going down as well, wasn't that one?
Yeah, that was the week after the Pollock on goal.
Yeah.
Speaking of consolation goals, actually, taking us right back to the start. The goals at the end of that game, City knew they were relegated because of results elsewhere. So when Kevin Orlock scores, Paul Dickhoff scores to make it 5-2, they celebrate like it's a consolation goal, but they're winning the game. That's a weird one.
Yeah. Weird sort of not only just consolation for the game, but consolation
for the season.
For the season, yeah. That's typical City. Do you remember that company on goal where he like sliced it and it went up in the air and there was just absolutely nowhere... There was no way it was going in the net, and it did.
Made by Jesus Navas trying to bicycle kick it off the line.
Yeah. We had a brilliant balloon incident, didn't we? In the cup with Michael Ball.
Sheffield United. Yeah.
Sheffield United. Yeah. Just loads and loads of little bits and pieces like that. Did we sign Rodney Marsh as top scorer and then score the most goals the next season? And not win the league or something.
Pushing me. Yeah.
I think we scored the most goals, but still went down.
Oh yeah. Over 100 goals. Went down.
But I don't know.
As reigning champions, obviously.
I don't know. Yeah. Was that the same as the Rodney Marsh season? No.
That was the 30s. That was the 30s.
That was going to be 1937 win the league. 1938 relegated with a positive goal difference.
Right. Yeah.
My other favourite from sitting in the mid-noughties is Manchester City shots on target 4, Manchester City shots off target 7, West Brom shots on target 0, West Brom shots off target 0. Final score, Manchester City 1, West Brom 1.
Oh, amazing.
Richard Dunn, own goal. I mean, come on, typical City or what?
Yeah. Incredible.
Can I also chuck in Middlesbrough again at home in that first season? Sun Chihai own goal. Middlesbrough didn't have a shot. They won the game 1-0. Plenty of moments like that. I actually thought, Mike, you were going to mention from the mid-noughties Bolton at home, where I think we hit the crossbar and the post 6 times and lost 1-0.
just great, isn't it? It's just great.
There was a tiny, tiny bit of it when City won the league. And then the Yaya Toure birthday cake stuff kicked off. Because I remember getting home from work and Adam, who was living with the time, my best mate, he was like, what the fuck is going on with your football club? And I was like, I just won the Premier League. Like, there's nothing going on. Focus on that. There was a tiny, tiny animal. And then the RIP Fergie, Tevez stuff. All this mad controversy has to come around. Even this season, like, one of our players winning the Ballon d'Or couldn't just be seamless and straightforward and, you know, just like without controversy and drama. It had to cause a whole fucking rift with their
diplomatic incident. Yeah,
yeah, diplomatic incident. Yeah, fucking love them.
Yeah, amazing stuff. If we've missed any, or you want to get yours off your chest, I mean, even I guess even Guardiola not knowing the difference between fuck off and fuck you, that could get into there in years to come, couldn't it? If we've missed any, get in touch. Contact us on Blue Sky. Just search for Blooming Podcast. You can email contact@bloomingpodcast.com as well. That's it for today's Blooming Podcast. Though, thank you very much to my guests for this one, Kieran Murray.
Thank you so much, David.
And Mike Miney.
Thank you, mate.
I hope that's cheered you both up. It's been a nice episode for a show where they've just got out of the Champions League. This week's nostalgia episode was Adam Carter talking through his memories of growing up as a City fan. He was picking out some random questions in quickfire, and we spoke to him about wins at St James's Park, the best and worst kits, fondly remembered goalkeepers, and returning players that always scored. There's a clip coming up shortly. If you want the full thing, head over to patreon.com/bloomingpodcast. I'll be back next week after the games with Liverpool and Spurs. See you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Away, I'm torn between two. Any red and black stripe, I love. I think you can think of the mid-90s red and black stripe. I even like that weird Lecoq Sportif one where it had bubbles in the red and black. Think Vincent Company era. Love the black and red for like David Silva away at QPR and Dzeko away at Spurs, red and black. Yeah. So I think that's a staple.
That Dzeko one is, I think, improved by the fact that the sponsor is in yellow.
Yes, I was literally just going to say the yellow accent really kind of finishes it off as well. And then third kit.
So basically, third kits are off the wall. So where do you land on this one?
I'm torn between two. There's the yellow and black one that I think it was the third one where around Andy Cole, Joey Barton, Darius Vassell era.
Yeah, yeah.
Yellow and black. I think that was limited edition. And then there was also a limited edition one around the Rolando Bianchi era where it was white with a blue kind of sash.
Yeah, but it wasn't a sash, corner. Was it? It was a corner,
Yeah, corner. I just loved that one as well. So they're my two, if they were thirds, they're my two thirds that I'm torn on as well.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.